Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
You're listening to HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Vero. I'm Tawny Alvarez from Vero, and today our guest is Marianne Ness, Executive Vice President of Commercial for Nordic Aqua Farms. Welcome, Marianne.
Thank you.
I'm super excited to have you here today, in part because something that we're talking about today is something I know absolutely nothing about. So some of my favorite episodes that we record are ones in which I spend the whole entire episode learning about something new. I would love for you to share with our listeners a little bit about your background before we get into what Nordic Aqua Farms does and what it's planning on doing kind of here in the United States. But first, let's talk about you. How did you come to have the position of Executive Vice President of Commercial at Nordic Aqua Farms, and what does that involve?
Well, actually, it started out as a family company back in Norway, and my husband started it. I was the one always doing corporate careers, and my last job was in McKesson, a U.S. company, as an executive vice president there as well. When we decided to expand to the U.S., I joined the company, so and took on the position, and I was always been the one with the more corporate career, and he's been the entrepreneur starting several businesses, and now it was time to join it. So I'm really excited.
So what are some of your past experiences in a corporate environment, and how do some of those relate to what you're doing now?
Well, I've been head of organizational development, business development, also commercial, sales and marketing, and I have those responsibilities here in Nordic Aqua Farms as well. And I have, in my previous career, worked on building up companies internationally, production companies. So it's basically the same as we're doing right here. So I think the combination of entrepreneurs and more corporate experience is good when we venture into the U.S. and start growing our business. We have two facilities in planning, one in Belfast and one in California.
So let's talk a little bit about what Nordic Aqua Farms is and kind of how it's evolved from what it is today from what it was 5 years ago.
Well, it's a land-based salmon facility. So it started out back in Norway about 5-6 years ago. And Eric, the entrepreneur and the founder of the company, got a research R&D license to build a facility, the grow-out facility on land. Usually what you see is that you produce fish in the ocean, in bays, in net pens. And there are limited places where you can grow. I mean, you can grow it in Norway, Iceland, Scotland, New Zealand, Canada, and northern Maine, the only place in the U.S. So, and there's a need for increase in production of salmon. Today, more than 50% of the salmon consumed is farmed, and that will increase. We need to double the protein production over the next decades. So we need to find new ways of doing it more sustainably.
Now, you mentioned a number of kind of limited places in which this type of farming can occur. Are those limitations based off of land-based farming, or is that if you were to do it in the water, farming in the ocean itself?
It's in the ocean itself. And that comes down to the water temperature, the currents, and the physical conditions, basically.
Now, by moving the farming on land, does that increase the geographical area in which you potentially could then have a salmon farm?
Yes.
And is that because you're able to kind of control all the conditions that normally would be more environmental in the other locations?
Yes, you will. You need access to clean fresh water and salt water, and You can control the temperature. You can control the intake water and the discharge water and all the conditions, the temperature of the water and everything. So that makes it possible to move it closer to the consumers. And I think that's why you see a lot of international companies coming into the U.S. right now in the RAS segment.
Now, when we talk about land-based fish farming, kind of any sort, where in the market are we right now? Is this something that's a new emerging market? Is it something that has been around for a while and maybe I or some of our listeners just were unaware of it? Or is this something that's already highly developed and you guys are coming into the show kind of, I don't want to say late in the game, but that you've figured out all the kinks and are just coming in as a competitor?
I would say yes, both yes and no. Land-based salmon farming in smolt facilities and hatcheries has been going on for a long time. So that has been developed over the last 30 or 40 years. It started as what they call flow-through, where the water flow through the facility, and now it's developed more into recirculating aquaculture facilities. So there are a lot of hatcheries and smolt facilities built. The difference here is that we keep the fish on land in what we call the grow-out facility. So we mature till harvest size on land. That's a fairly new phenomenon, but the technology is there. But you need a lot of good fish farming experience with RAS facilities to be able to do it. It's a challenging way of doing it, but it's feasible, and you see a lot of people succeeding with it.
So specifically, I guess generally and specifically, look at this. The question has multiple facets, but the goal is to sustainably farm salmon, correct?
Yes.
Now, is the way in which salmon had been farmed kind of to date unsustainable, or is it based off of the movement from land out of the ocean?
Well, I would say that there are a lot of innovation in the traditional net pen industry in terms of dealing with the issues that they're facing. There have been a lot of or some episodes of fish escape and commingling with vile species. There are, you know, sea lice problems. You have seen a few die-offs due to the changing water temperatures. So, and of course, you have some issues with all the discharge from the facilities. So, yes, this is a more, you know, environmentally friendly way of doing it. But there also been a lot of innovation in the traditional net pen industry as well.
I think that kind of brings me to the heart of kind of why I wanted you on the show and for us to start talking about things is, I mean, it is HR Power Hour, so our focus is on human resources issues. In one sentence, you've talked about sustainability, you've talked about innovation, you've talked of a movement, an international movement from Norway over to the United States, now having two different facilities on opposite ends of the coast, so in Maine and then also in California. So I really want to now jump into kind of operationally how some of the difficulties that you guys have faced or foresee facing from a workforce development standpoint. So my first question kind of from that standpoint or with that background is, how different is it to employ people in the United States than it is in Norway or at some of the other locations in which you guys have had facilities?
I don't really see that much of a difference. We have been contacted by a lot of interested people. Here in Maine, I mean, you do have a lot of people interested. We have a very good aquaculture degree that you can get at the UNE. You have marine biology and other relevant degrees as well in the universities, and you have a lot of focus on you know, a lot of a culture that has focused on aquaculture and fisheries, and we've seen a lot of interest in from, you know, younger people and people with experience. I think the difference, if you look at what they've done in Europe, in Norway, Iceland, and Scotland in particular, is that they have developed an educational system, a degree with more operational focus, which I think, you know, is important here too. And that's probably where we're going to see the biggest challenge here in the U.S., people with more operational skills or what I would call work readiness skills. And I think that's important to focus on because there are plenty of people that are interested. And we chose Belfast, a nice town on the mid-coast to be able to attract people to. It's a nice community for families to live in and, you know, raise your family, and which I think is important when you want to attract, you know, a high-skilled workforce.
We're talking to Marianne Ness, the Executive Vice President of Commercial for Nordic Aqua Farms. And to date, we've now talked about kind of the movement over of Nordic Aqua Farms from Norway, its beginning, and exactly what it is it's doing with regards to on-land salmon farming. So you've just mentioned kind of operational readiness or workforce readiness. What are some of the things that you believe Iceland or Norway's doing right now that we could be adding into our curriculum to help college students be more workforce ready after exiting college?
Well, I think having structured internships, for example, apprenticeships, having focus on more operational skills, I would say fish welfare, operational metrics, bioplanning, and HSE, more financial metrics, understanding the difference between, or maybe the connection between the choice you make in production and the output for the company. So many more, I would say, applied knowledge or skills.
I think that's a really good point, and I think it's something that we don't, as a community and a society, focus enough on. I mean, looking back, so my undergraduate degree is in business management, and when I think back on what really left its mark and what I use on a daily basis, the macroeconomics and microeconomics, yes, those are important from a global standpoint to understand different aspects of business and society, but it's definitely not something I'm using on a daily basis. But what I am using on a daily basis is everything I learned in, you know, my 2-credit business communications class, which was how to format a letter and salutations and kind of those very specific skills that may seem fundamental. But I think now when I receive a letter that's improperly formatted or kind of isn't ready for the business communication that I think so many of us are expecting, that it becomes that much more, I don't want to say off-putting, but concerning as to what are we focusing on in the education system and how is it preparing students, either from a 4-year degree or a 2-year degree, to enter the workforce.
Well, I can use my own story as an example, too. I went to grad school in Oregon and got a degree in international studies. And I'm like, what can I use this for? So I ended up taking a second graduate degree in public policy and planning, public administration, which is a more hands-on, give you the tools that you needed to enter the workforce. And I think that's important here, too.
And it's interesting because I think as a society, we are looking more at workforce readiness with kind of that idea of apprenticeships, is how can we make apprenticeships something that's more accessible, or not just accessible, but that is looked at as a necessary skill or a necessary aspect of the evolution of a job or an individual, as opposed to saying like, oh, it's just an internship and it's something that not everyone needs to experience. And not just that, but I think that the wage and hour laws currently are not set up to permit businesses to take full advantage of some type of training program in which maybe they're not making the full pay, or that they're learning different skill sets while they're either going to school or while they're getting some type of certificate program.
Well, I think our, you know, goal is to create a good, stable workforce with passion for what we're doing. And we have a lot of things going for us. It's a new business. It's a combination of biology and technology. And it has a good sustainability message. So we want to create a stable workforce. And I think you could do that. We need people with, you know, high school degrees, vocational degrees, and college degrees. And I think, you know, it's a way of having good apprenticeships or internships. It's a way of educating people and taking advantage of what they can learn, and with the ultimate goal of creating, you know, a passionate, stable workforce. So, and we do need to train them, but, you know, it has to be in a systematic or a more systematic way.
So. Absolutely. And I definitely want to talk more about that generally. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. Our guest today is Marianne Ness. This is HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBRadio.com.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
It's 3 p.m., and you just ran out of ink. You have a report due end of day, which is 2 hours from now. You can't push the deadline because end of day means end of today, not end of tomorrow day. What now? Go to your local Staples store. Staples now has an even bigger selection of HP ink and toner. In store, in stock, and at low prices every day. So you can get your ink fast for less. End of story.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsInME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsInME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsInME.com. That's JobsInME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Today's economic environment presents many challenges. It seems as though it's harder than ever to navigate the investment landscape to seek out adequate return and manage risk at the same time. ClearPoint Financial is a financial advocate for those who need assistance making complex decisions about how to manage their wealth. They inspire their clients to make informed decisions through education, communication, and service that exceeds expectation. Call Michael Toole at ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
We're back, and you're listening to HR Power Hour. Our guest today is Marianne Ness from Nordic Aqua Farms. Today, we've been talking about generally what Nordic Aqua Farms is doing here in the United States, its evolution, and how it got to where it is today. And directly prior to the break, Marianne mentioned three specific kind of skill sets or backgrounds that they are looking for in the ideal candidate. And she discussed kind of biology, technology, and sustainability. I really want to talk a little bit more about those concepts and the goal or kind of what we're looking for when we're talking about a workforce such as this, which maybe you have individuals who have a biology background or you have individuals with a technology background or who are really focused on sustainability. What kind of things are we going to do in order to attract people who maybe have a little bit of all of those things?
That's a pretty comprehensive question. I think, you know, if you look at the jobs that we need or the skills that we need in our facility, it's a highly technical facility. But I always say you can't fool biology. You can't engineer your way out of biology. You need to have focus on fish welfare, and that's where the passion for what we're doing and the sustainability focus comes in, as well as the biology focus. Basically, you need to make sure that the fish thrive. You need to make sure, you know, salmon is a school fish. They like to be crowded. But you need to make sure that they have the right water temperature, the right water quality, and you feed them right. And so there are a lot of technical skills when you grow them inside as well. It's a pretty technical and facility that needs to be monitored and needs to be followed up. But then also have to have focus on the fish. So that's where you come in with both the technology and the biology, you know, in mix kind of. And you don't really need to have a degree in each of them, but the understanding and the interest in it is important. And I think if you focus on aquaculture degrees, like they have at UNE, for example, you will get, you know, a little flavor of all of it, because you're directed toward, you know, understanding how to operate a aquaculture facility, being, you know, shellfish or oyster or salmon facility. So I think that's important. And but there are also, you know, a lot of high quality and interesting jobs. We are basically, this is a huge wastewater treatment facility. We are treating the water, the intake water, taking out parasites and pathogens, making sure that the fish have the high quality water that they need. And we're treating the discharge, taking out, you know, 99% of phosphorus and TSS, the total suspended solids, and the BOD, and more than 90% of the nitrogen, which means that it's a really qualified technical expertise that we need in these facilities. And then we do fish processing, and we treat the fish. So that's where you need a different kind of skills, more production, food production skills. So it's a combination of a lot of different skills. And, of course, we do, you know, technical maintenance, for example, and running the facility. And we have the support functions that you would have in a facility like this. So I think it's a wide array of different kind of jobs that we need. And not to speak of all the ancillary businesses that this will, you know, develop both upstream and downstream. We have a goal of using 100% of the fish, and which means that the and we sell the fish either head on gutted or filleted, so you do have a lot of byproducts, and these are valuable. The feed residue and the feces is a, you know, valuable, can make into valuable fertilizers. You have the cutoffs from the fish. We can make fish oil. You can make pet food. We even have a project, you know, looking into if you can use it as lobster bait, changing the regulations and providing high quality and cheaper lobster bait to the lobstermen here in Maine.
Now, I think that gets into a really interesting aspect of what Nordic Aqua Farms is doing, because it's not just that you're growing, you're doing a land-based growth of salmon, but then are you also in part, are you processing it on-site, or is the goal that some of the processing is going to be occurring there internally from a, I don't want to say a manufacturing standpoint, but from a manufacturing standpoint?
We're doing the, what I would say, the first-grade processing, which means gutting the fish, filleting the fish. Any kind of secondary processing, for example, packaging or smoking, etc., we're not doing. So then we would work with other facilities.
So that becomes a really interesting kind of concept as well. So having the location in Belfast, and then where in California is the secondary location?
It's in Humboldt County, like Northern California.
Okay, so Northern California. I mean, from there, in order to transport the product, right, is it all going to be based off of 18-wheelers and the trucking industry? Because I'm guessing rail system at that point in time, at least if we're keeping the fish within the United States, which I presume is the goal, and that we're not shipping them back to Norway or to Scandinavia generally, yeah. Correct?
Yes, that's the whole idea of being here close to the market. It will be trucked. We have a saying that our fish don't fly.
I love it. So they're not going over. They're not going over the Atlantic or Pacific. These fish are staying right here in the United States.
And that's why we have two facilities, two, one on each coast. So we want to produce it regionally. A locally produced fish that could be, you know, that will reach the market within a short period of time, usually a day, and you can have it ultra fresh in the market, and the traceability and basically local regional food.
So by bringing these salmon farms to the United States, kind of generally, we're increasing not just the technical and the biology, the science behind farming and appropriately raising salmon in a sustainable practice, but then we also have additional kind of workforce development in both the processing, and I'm going to use that term kind of generally, both from Right out of the water, cut fillet, but then also processing in a packaging standpoint, and then also transport, which is then going to go throughout the country kind of generally either to restaurants or in a larger kind of
retail
setting. Have you guys performed, or what is the goal kind of within the next 5 years as to how many jobs you'll have created at each of these locations?
Well, the facility, we're permitting the whole facility right now, but we're going to build it out in phases, so in two or three phases. So hopefully we'll break ground next year here in Maine and build phase one. I would say probably we'll looking at 60, 70 jobs at phase one, and then up to 100 plus at least. In California, it's approximately the same. Facility in California is projected to be about 80% in size of the main facility. So more or less, the same.
And is that on a similar timeline to the main project from a permitting standpoint, or is there a chance that project could be done sooner?
Well, Maine is ahead of the California project right now, but we're just starting permitting in California, most likely within a few weeks. So it's taking a long time here in Maine, and permits can be appealed, and that takes quite some time. That's out of our control. So hopefully we can start Maine first, but it all depends how easy the permitting goes, and if we're tied up in any legal battles. We do have some opponents, and very few, but they're pretty vocal.
Understood. Now, we're talking to Marianne Ness, Executive Vice President of Commercial for Nordic Aquafarms. We've been talking generally about the movement of Nordic Aquafarms into the United States and the work that they are doing to create sustainable land-based salmon farms. I guess one of my questions is right now Maine is looking at a really low unemployment rate, which makes it for a lot of organizations and a lot of different industries difficult to hire. They're running into issues regarding both bringing in the right candidates for the job and in some cases retaining them. How many other similar facilities are there in the United States right now that are doing this land-based sustainable salmon farming? And the reason that I ask that is because in my mind, I'm thinking, how much movement potentially do we have of people into the state for jobs like this?
Here in Maine, we have our facility, and then there is a similar facility being proposed in Bucksport. I think there will be another one too, further down east, producing yellowtail kingfish. They haven't announced yet, but that's what I hear. There's a huge one in Florida, and I know about one being proposed in Virginia, and there are several smaller ones too. So yes, there will be, I think, movement of people. I think what we see here in Maine, and you certainly see it in Humboldt as well, you have a lot of underemployed people. So there's a saying in Humboldt that they have the most highly educated waiting staff. People want to stay there. I think you see that here in Maine, too.
Absolutely. PhDs who are in the food service environment, and whether they're happy to be there or that's what was available is sometimes questionable. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at other, and I don't want to say similar because I'm sure there's significant differences, but location in Florida, location in Virginia. I mean, I have to think that we have significantly more educational institutions that are graduating individuals with this marine biology kind of background than what two other facilities potentially kind of need. So I would think that there would be an excess, but a significant quantity of individuals who have kind of at least the biology standpoint in order to assist in the evolution and innovation that's necessary in this industry. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think you find good educational institutions in Florida as well. Actually, we have a production manager. He's a Mainer, but he got his graduate degree in Florida, and we brought him back to Maine. The reason why we're in Maine is that Maine has a long fisheries and aquaculture tradition and heritage. Is the second largest aquaculture or seafood state in the U.S. And I think branding-wise, it's seen as, you know, clean, pristine. And it's salmon is a cold water fish, and, you know, it fits with the image and the brand of Maine.
Absolutely. I mean, there's we talk about the lobster and kind of how much the Lobster Council has generally done from an advertising and a marketing standpoint in order to make people think of Maine and lobster. And it'll be interesting if we can expand that image more generally as your organization and other similar kind of land-based fish farming organizations continue to grow within the state, to expand it, to talk about kind of the amazing oysters that the state's producing, and then some of these land-based fish in addition to the lobster and and the blueberry. I mean, the blueberry has always been a land-based focus, but it'll be interesting if we'll be able to kind of bring the focus to fish as well.
I think there is a lot of unutilized potential in Maine. You can see, I mean, salmon, for example, is basically as a consumer product is built marketing-wise from Norway, and they did it across the industries and started marketing it. It's a pretty interesting story, and I think, you know, branding Maine as a seafood destination, as a state that brings on all kinds of different seafood, there's a huge potential, but the industry here is very fragmented. But I think there's potential to work across the different, you know, aspects of the industry or different areas of the industry and promote Maine as a seafood state.
Do you think that kind of how much notoriety Maine's gotten recently as a foodie destination will also be of assistance there? I mean, I think it would be great for so many restaurants within Maine itself who's attracting out-of-staters to say, and this was grown... This was grown right next door, right up the coast, and now it's in front of you kind of the day after it was filleted.
Definitely, and I think that's the greatest asset for Maine. And when we looked at locations for our facility, we did a scientific search from Washington, D.C. to the Canadian border and ended up in Maine and looked at different sites in Maine and found Belfast as, you know, the ideal site. So I think the branding of Maine, the possibilities, the workforce, and as you said, you know, it's a foodie destination both for, you know, people coming here and for exporting products, you know, to the Northeast region and even further. So yes, there are plenty of opportunities.
I'm Tani Alvarez from Vero, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We're talking today to Marianne Ness, Executive Vice President of Commercial at Nordic Aqua Farm. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
This tax season, AutoZone has everything your car needs. Did you know that with the Loaner Tool program at AutoZone, you can borrow a specialty tool with no purchase necessary? Choose from over 100 tools to help you get the job done right, no matter how big or small. And right now, get 5.25 ounces of Lucas Complete Field Treatment for $4.99 each, or two for $8. Visit any of our 5,000 locations nationwide, and let's get you what you need. Deposit required. Restrictions and details in store. Get in the zone.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
We're back. I'm Tawny, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. And our guest today is Marianne Ness from Nordic Aquafarms. We've been talking a lot about Nordic Aquafarms, what it's doing, their goals in recruiting staff and growing this industry, both within the state of Maine and throughout the country. We've been focusing a lot on fish, but I'd like to even backtrack and talk, Marianne, a little bit about you and your background. One of my favorite questions to ask people whenever we're sitting in these chairs with these headphones on and the microphones in front of us is, are the questions about how you get here? How did you have, just spit it out, Tawny, did you have a sponsor or a mentor who, in your mind, you think back on something that they've said to you and it kind of helps you keep going?
I have had, throughout my career, I graduated from grad school in 95, and I did 10 years in consulting, and then after that I did corporate executive jobs. I have had a lot of good, I would say, mentors and advisors. I've had some really good managers and also some other people that, you know, you've listened to, several actually, so... Which I think has been important for me to discuss challenges that you face. And I've had, for example, our previous chairman of our board, the company that I worked in, and with, you know, a lot more experience, 20, 30 years my senior, and a lot of more experience. And they could test your ideas, you know, on and get feedback. And I think also, you know, alleviate some of the stress that you often, you know, experience in executive jobs in corporate. So, yes, I've had plenty of people that I've, you know, used as mentors throughout my career.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that I'm hearing more and more of from individuals is not just one individual or kind of one person, but have you ever used any type of group support team? And I've heard more and more from executives who talk about having a small group of close-knit kind of trusted people who maybe they have a text message string or they have an email string or they have this group environment where maybe something in their past brings them together to help them share ideas or, as you say, kind of like spot check themselves when there's something that they're questioning. Will it be successful? Am I seeing it from all the right angles? Do you have anything like that in your life?
Not at the moment, not since I moved here, but I have attended several, you know, leadership development programs that go over time where you have groups that you work closely with, and that will be that kind of group that you test your ideas and you discuss and you have a fairly open discussion. I've also been part of professional networks where you see that, and that's been useful. So, I think it's important, especially if you work. I mean, being an entrepreneur or being a corporate executive is a pretty lonely job. So it is important to talk to people outside of the company or outside of your line management, both ways, basically. So sometimes you need some need to ventilate, as I call it, a little bit, or you need advice. Yes, that's important.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that, especially as a culture, the United States specifically, and it might be similar in Norway as well, but sometimes it's hard to admit when we need help. And I find myself struggling with that a lot, to say, like, I don't know what to do next. I need help. I need guidance. And it's so important to have that very kind of healthy group of people who you know you can turn to and say, this is where I'm at. Can you meet me where I'm at? And what am I doing wrong? Or what am I not seeing? Or how can I progress past this impediment? Which in this moment, seems insurmountable. But in fact, once you put it in perspective and talk to other people about it, you realize, okay, I can get over this molehill and I can face the next one as well. But without sometimes that outside perception, I know from myself that I struggle with that at least.
I think that's a cultural issue as well. What I see the difference, and I worked for, American companies, large American companies for the last 10, 12 years. And I also been responsible for subsidiaries in the U.S. in a previous job. But I think there's a difference culturally between Northern Europe and the U.S. I've had, executive HR jobs, and I always keep telling my leaders and the people that I coach that no one's perfect. You don't know everything. You're not hired as a manager to know everything. You're hired as a manager to make sure that people that work for you can, perform as well. No one expects a executive or a manager to know everything, but they expect them to be good leaders, mentors for others. And I think showing weakness, showing that you actually can ask for help is important. But I think that's more difficult here than what I'm used to in Scandinavia. It's a more hierarchical culture. And to me, that's a sign of strength, more than a sign of a weakness. Knowing your capabilities and where your strengths and weaknesses are.
I think that's a really good point, and something that we do overlook is that concept of knowing, acknowledging, and recognizing that we don't know everything. And we actually don't even know what we don't know. It is really a big part of it. And so often, from an HR standpoint, I think we run into that issue where we have an expectation of a new manager or someone who's come into a new position. And when we step back and say, like, well, how would they know that this was our expectation? How did we communicate it to them? And how would they naturally know this? In a lot of situations, once we put ourselves in that perspective, I think it becomes clear that we have a lot of work to do from a communication standpoint to make sure that either our expectations are clear or that generally we're making sure that we're providing, there's a statement called a just culture, which means that we're allowing kind of individuals to come forward and to make those statements without fear that they're going to be looked at detrimentally or as lesser managers because they didn't know the answer to the question.
Well, my attitude towards that and what I've always been communicating to my employees is that you're here to assemble the best team. You're not here to be the expert. Give credit to people. I do not like having people working for me that take credit for something that one of their employees did. Because a good manager will actually make people grow. And they will assemble the best team and take credit for being a good manager that could actually get, high performance people working for them. So that's a definition or a question of defining the role and the responsibilities and the expectations. And to me, it's I really do dislike when people take credit for something that other people do, and especially if I find out. And you're the best manager if you can actually, make people grow and build a strong team.
That's an amazing point, because when people are growing and doing their job and doing it amazing and above average, I mean, you as a leader can take kind of not credit for it, but you've assembled the team and they're there helping
you. And you're coaching
them. Yeah, along the way. So their success is a team success. And I think that's really an amazing, amazing way to look at it, and a good focus on kind of, especially when we're talking about a new industry kind of that you guys are looking to put together, with the differences with the biology, with the technology, the sustainability aspect of it, and you coming in and having this much more general kind of corporate background and these corporate concepts, I think is so important in creating the right team and evolving the right team and making sure that this is successful and that Maine does become a fish destination as well as a lobster destination.
I think, one more point, too, is that as a manager or executive or whatever level you are, as a manager, you have to do and not say. Do as I do and do not do as I say. So you need to be a good example. for the people that you lead. That's important too.
Absolutely. And I think when we talk about creation of policies and practices, if I see a policy or a practice and a manager isn't following, it really becomes a question where I say, well, I'm not going to hold someone else accountable for something that you're not even following. So yeah, on paper, maybe we have this policy, but if you're telling me that you don't even follow it, then how is that going to be perceived from your workforce? And how is that creating a culture that people want to work in or be a part of? Because it's not. And then when you see or you hear companies saying, well, I don't know, people just aren't engaged or they're not motivated, you want to look at the leaders and say, well, without the leadership to engage and motivate people, it's not going to work.
Well, that's true. And usually you have access to the same kind of people, and an organization can perform well or, you know, poorly. And that comes down to leadership. And of course, you know, some external, you know, situations as well, but usually it's leadership.
We're talking to Mary Ann Ness, Executive Vice President of Commercial at Nordic Aqua Farm. I'm Tawny Alvarez, and this is HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBRadio.com. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
We're back. You're listening to HR Power Hour, and our guest today is Mary Ann Ness from Nordic Aqua Farms. We've been talking about a host of different issues, from fish to farming to company culture and the effect that it has generally on leadership skills and the ability to make a company work and be successful and profitable. And when those things are happening, it's always the hope that the culture is creating a place that people want to be and that they want to be at for the long term. I think one of the questions that's at the top of my mind that I've been holding on to this whole time, because I've been thinking, oh, do you ask it? What's it like working with a partner? I mean, what is it like? You mentioned at the beginning of the show that your husband received the grant in Norway kind of to start the process. And it was only recently that you left corporate America from executive positions to join the company. So tell me what it's like since you've made that change.
Well, it actually has been easier than we both thought before we started. I graduated from grad school in 95, so I have a long career behind me. I just turned 50. So I think the time was right to do it. I couldn't have done it 10 years ago. But now I have a lot of experience that I can bring to the table, and we're older. Our kids are, you know, from 18 till 22, so we don't have those family obligations that we used to have. And basically, we're looking at this as an adventure, something that we do together, you know. But it's the whole setting, moving from Europe to the U.S., building this organization from scratch together. And it's been easier than I anticipated, but of course it's a little different. It's a little strange too.
I can only imagine. It's interesting because we talk a lot about family-owned businesses in Maine and the different organizations that fall within that setting. And we laugh as a firm, Verrill, that we're also a family-owned business because we do have couples within the organization. Would you consider yourself a family-owned business, or is it a way in which you identify yourself, or is it still too new to really know that?
Well, it started as a family-owned business. In a sense, it is culturally, but we have grown. And it's a very capital-intensive business with investors, so it's a more professional organization right now. And but it feels like small family-owned business here in the U.S. at this point. I think what's important when you grow a business and you have two people that head the business, you know, together. My husband is the president of the organization. I have an executive role in the organization as well, is to pay attention to that and how that influences the other employees, and you have to make it easy for them to talk to both of us, not feeling that. And sometimes we disagree, you know, in front of our colleagues. Just, you know, they have to make sure that we're not, you know, one team or one person. We're two different people with, you know, performing different jobs. I think the greatest challenge is to ensure that the organization perceives it that way as well. And I think some of the disadvantages, and now we have an open landscape, you know, office, and when we grow, we'll make sure that we don't have, you know, sit, you know, close to each other. By default, sometimes we speak Norwegian, which is now we try to avoid because there are other people there. So you have to get used to that as well.
Have you created or found it necessary to put any limitations on shop talk, kind of generally, say, you know, when we're in the offices, when we're dealing with that, or especially with kind of a new and maturing business like this, is it all encompassing to kind of all aspects of your life still at this point?
It is. And we don't have a, you know, a clear in the office or outside of the office, but we try to do other things as well. And I always try to get at least one day off a week where I focus on other things.
Absolutely. I think that's super.
It's a lifestyle. It's at this point, it's more a lifestyle than a job.
Understandable. I think in the startup capacity and kind of with that startup mindset, it really is a lifestyle. And if anyone's looking at it as a job, then they might not be looking at that full picture. Marianne, it was so amazing to talk to you and to hear about your experiences and what Nordic Aquafarm is doing here and in California.
Thank you.
You've been listening to HR Power Hour. I'm Tawny Alvarez, and this is News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Join us next week.
And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
When is the last time you looked at your employee handbook? Hi, this is Ben Ford from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group. A lot has changed in labor and employment law in the last 5 years. If it's been a while since you've updated your handbook, it's time to take another look. There are a few new disclosures and policies that you need, including the Defend Trade Secrets Act and the Pay Equity Acts. While it is important to include new laws, it is far more important to ensure that your company is complying with the policies in the manual. The absolute worst thing that can happen is to make a termination decision based on a policy that is out of date or not even followed by anyone. Need help with your employee manuals? Call Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.